Franklin is still around and kicking, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's still
freezing himself here.
Yeah, he does, like, more extreme sports shit, yeah. Right? Like,
who cares anymore? He's played out. It's time to retire David Blaine.
You should advise him.
I should. I'm just like,
excuse me, David. It's a little gauche.
Yeah, go work at whatever retail store Chris Angel works at now.
Why don't you try managing a Hot Topic?
That would work for both of them.
Had a successful TV show.
And you know what? That's completely fair.
Can you say the same about yourself?
What? Yeah.
Chris Angel had a successful TV show. Can you say the same about yourself?
No.
Did Chris Revell?
Yeah.
Chris Revell, Mind Freak.
It's Mind Freak.
Dress Freak.
Look at that gal.
It would just be 30 minutes of me harassing women on the street. Your dress is great. I'd run down the street and your dress is great.
Just glitter wrong people.
Is that a skirt? They're pants? Great.
Happy holidays, everyone, and welcome to Why Do We Watch This, the podcast where a bunch of friends watch a bad movie, talk about what they liked, what they didn't like, drink a themed cocktail, and then try and fix that movie in some sort of order like that. That's sort of what we're doing this time, even though it's a mini-episode. Myself, though, I'm Brendan Drischler.
I'm Lee Delahanty.
And I'm Chris Revell.
For this episode, as I said, it is technically a mini-episode, but we're sort of doing that thing that we normally do with our full-length episodes, where we try and fix a movie. But this time, there's a special little twist. I'll get to that in a minute, however. The first thing I want to tackle is what we will be doing 2 weeks from now for our Christmas movie spectacular.
Gird Them Loins!
Gird Them Loins, fellas and ladies. We're doing Love Actually.
Whoa!
That's right, we're coming after your favorite.
Listen, guys, I know this is going to be hard to listen to because literally no one else that you've heard speak or seen write has ever had anything negative to say about Love Actually or even proposed the idea that it could be better.
Jezebel has a lot of nice things to say about this movie.
As does every writer writing a hot take think piece around the holidays.
We were actually going to do I'll Be Home for Christmas, but none of us liked that movie. And then Lee suggested, why not Love Actually? We said, oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, that is some fertile ground for improvement, for
it
sure.
It is. There's a lot to tackle with Love Actually, so get ready for that in 2 weeks. The drink that we will be having for Love Actually will actually be two drinks. The first drink will be called Love Actually is Mulled Around, which is apple cider, dry red wine, maple syrup, black peppercorns, orange slices, and apple slices. And you're going to simmer them all up together, and you're going to get a nice hot drink to enjoy. The other drink is called a Nativity Lobster, which is going to be some pink champagne or sparkling rosé, stout beer, a little bit of ground espresso, and an orange twist garnish, where you're going to fill most of a glass with the champagne or rosé, top with the stout beer, and garnish with a little pinch of the espresso and an orange twist. So we got two drinks to get us through that movie because there is a fucking lot to talk about in that movie.
There sure is.
We'll have to see how that works. For this week, though, what we decided to do is we decided to watch a Christmas movie that we all mostly really like. Mm-hmm. And then talk about if we were to remake this movie, how would we remake this movie?
So, Brendan, what was that movie?
Well, Chris, let me tell you what that movie was.
Please do.
That movie was Christmas in Connecticut.
Oh, my God. I love Christmas in Connecticut.
I know.
No, I legit do really like this movie a lot.
It's from 1946. Is that right?
Yeah.
Do you have it?
No, I'm sorry. 1945. It actually came out on my birthday, August 11th,
happy
in 1945.
Wait, it came out in August?
Isn't that insane?
Oh, the 40s were such a bizarre time for Christmas movies.
They're like, end of summer. You know what time it is, guys. Christmas!
It's just half a year away.
Yeah, right. Did I ever show you guys the trailer for Miracle on 34th Street?
No.
Where there's like, it starts with the studio exec like watching like the movie ends and he's like, I'm looking at this marketing team ideas, and you're like, it's a comedy, it's a legal drama, it's a romance. Fellas, it can't be all those things. And then it's him, like, walking around the studio, like, oh, hey, Rex Harrison, did you see Miracle on 34th Street? And Rex Harrison's like, well, yes, I don't know what the ladies will think of it, but I thought it was a splendid legal drama.
Are you for
real? Yeah, and then they'll talk to a woman, and she'll be like, oh, well, I just love the romance of this movie. And so then it ends with him, like, watching the movie, and it's like a clip of him, like, going, ha, 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 and then, like, crying, and then, like, going, wow, how riveting. And then it's gonna be like, fellas, this movie is everything. And at no point in the movie does it say it's a movie about Santa Claus coming to New York City.
Wow.
Because it was also released in the summer.
Why is this a thing?
I don't know. Maybe in the 40s they just didn't care. Anyways.
Wow.
Christmas in Connecticut.
Wow, wow, wow. This is mind-blowing.
Chris is gonna go into the synopsis for this movie.
I sure am.
Real quick, we made a drink for it as well because we figured, why not? We might as well enjoy ourselves with doing this. So we made a drink called a hot catastrophe. And for this recipe, we used 3 bottles of red wine, 6 ounces of honey whiskey, 3 ounces of triple sec, 3/4 of a cup of brown sugar, 3 oranges, 5 cinnamon sticks, 9 whole cloves, and 15 allspice berries. So we threw the wine into the crock pot, added cinnamon sticks, whole cloves, and allspice berries in cheesecloth, added the juice of 1.5 oranges, sliced the remaining oranges, and threw them into the crock pot with triple sec. We cooked it for a few hours, and then we added in the whiskey and the brown sugar. Guys, how was that drink?
Well, I want to say, guys, cut that in thirds.
Yes.
If you are 1 to 3 people.
We had 4 people watching this movie, yeah. So it was a perfect amount for 4 people.
To have 2 rounds.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, we all had 2 rounds. If you have any less than that, by all means, don't use 3 bottles of wine.
Cut it out. It was delicious. I feel wonderful. I thought it was so smooth and wonderful, and as soon, when I came in downstairs, I could smell it all. It was wonderful.
It was like a Folgers commercial.
It really
was. You wake up out of bed and just smell that freeze-dried coffee.
and then go down and have like a really awkwardly sexually charged moment with my sibling. No! Do you remember that one? Where it's like a brother has like come home from like war or something. Cool. It's like a sister is serving him coffee and there's a lot of like long-held gazes. Anyway.
Speaking of long-held gazes and people coming back from war, Chris, why don't you give us that synopsis?
I'd love to. Elizabeth Lane, played by Barbara Stanwyck, is a single food writer living in New York whose articles about her fictitious Connecticut farm, husband, and baby are admired by housewives across the country. Her publisher, Alexandra Yardley, played by Sydney Greenstreet, is unaware of the charade and insists that Elizabeth hosts a Christmas dinner for a returning war hero, Jefferson Jones, played by Dennis Morgan, who read all of her recipes while in the hospital and is so fond of her that his nurse wrote a letter to the publisher. Facing a career-ending scandal, not only for herself, but also for her editor, Dudley Beecham, played by Robert Shane, Lane is forced to comply. In desperation, Elizabeth agrees to marry her friend, John Sloan, played by Reginald Gardner, who has a farm in Connecticut, even though she does not love him. She also enlists the help of another friend, I thought it was her uncle, Chef Felix Bosanek, played by S.Z. Sackle, who has been providing her with the recipes for her articles. Al Sloan's picturesque Connecticut farm on Christmas Eve, Elizabeth meets Nora, played by Una O'Connor, the housemaid, as well as a neighbor's baby whom they pretend is their baby. I guess in this case, Elizabeth's and John's. Elizabeth and John plan to be married immediately by Judge Crothers, played by Dick Elliott, but the ceremony is interrupted when Jefferson arrives and it is love at first sight. The wording makes it seem like it's the judge and Jefferson. Jefferson, in contrast to Elizabeth, is trained through the children of his sister to cope with babies. So they, it's more him, give the baby a bath. After dinner, they spend time together in the barn. The syntax of this is horrible. They are falling in love, but Jefferson restrains himself because he believes that Elizabeth is married with a child. The judge returns on Christmas morning, but the ceremony is postponed a second time when a different neighbor's baby is presented instead of the one from the day before. The household is alarmed when Felix claims that the baby has swallowed his watch. After the judge leaves, Felix admits to Elizabeth that he lied about the watch to stop the wedding. While the household attends a local dance, the baby's real mother arrives to pick up her baby. Yardley witnesses her leave with the child and assumes that someone is kidnapping the baby. He calls the police and the newspapers. Elizabeth and Jefferson spend the night in jail, mistakenly charged with stealing a neighbor's horse and sleigh, and return to the farm early the next morning. Yardley chastises Elizabeth for being out all night and accuses her of neglecting her child. Elizabeth finally confesses to all. Furious, Mr. Yardley fires her. Jefferson's fiancée, Mary Lee, arrives unexpectedly. Dejected, Elizabeth retires to pack her things and leave the farm. Felix learns that Mary Lee has already married someone else and must break the engagement. He entices Yardley into the kitchen with the smell of cooking kidneys. He fabricates a story about a competing magazine's attempts to hire Elizabeth, and Yardley decides to hire her back at double her salary. Felix tells Jefferson that he is free to pursue Elizabeth. Elizabeth's packing is interrupted, first by Yardley and then by Jefferson. After teasing her that he is a cad who woos married women, Jefferson reveals the truth. The couple kisses and plans to marry.
What a Christmas. What a Christmas.
Is the last line.
Is the last line.
Is the last line.
And indeed, what a Christmas
what
it was.
What a Christmas.
All right. So I think we established kind of earlier on that this is a movie that we all do enjoy. why do we enjoy it, guys? Let's just talk a little bit about the elements of this movie that that make it good to us.
It's fun. It's farcical, which is something I appreciate farce being done very well. I really love Barbara Stanwyck as Elizabeth. I think she has this kind of droll, sarcastic, sort of over-it edge that I really enjoy.
I think there's something good to be said about her portrayal of Elizabeth Lane in this movie. How Elizabeth could very easily be demonized as a woman who's, like, can't cook and can't do anything in the house. But she's, like, not portrayed as, like, an awful person.
No, she seems fun, like someone you want to get a drink with, honestly.
I mean, I have to say, like, every time I watch this, I like this movie. I like it a lot, I guess. But, like, I do find things that I don't like about it every time I watch it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, I will say as a counterpoint to, like, while she's not, like, demonized, I always, like, the more and more when I watched it, especially today when I watched it, I was, like, she's not even, I mean, not even that she's not pretending very well to be married while she's, like, really brutally flirting with this guy.
I mean, she is
but she's, like,
leaning
really
into
trying
him.
To hook him as if she's, like, forgotten that she has to put
that
up
that is true.
Bruce.
And very, very quickly, the pretense of being married goes out the window when she's with him.
Yeah. And it's, like, very, like, I don't know, it's almost cruel to do this to someone.
Right, to John. Guy who has no reason to assume that she's not married.
Yeah. But, like, she's, basically, like,
well, I think you're
inviting him in.
I think there's two things you're kind of supposed to, at least I took away from that, is, A, the pure handsomeness of Jefferson is enough to just, like, blank the plan from her mind, which I get, because he's extremely hot in this movie. But then also, I feel like she's so not good at living this lie in person that she's just sort of like, nah, whatever. I mean, like,
yeah,
she seems to be shrugging out of it as much as she can.
I like her a lot in the beginning. I don't really like, I like her less as the movie goes on, I think. But I think it's a bigger problem I have with the rom-com plotline.
Yeah.
But I think I guess if I talk about what I do like about this movie that never changes, is like, it just has a lot of humor that really holds up.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's full-blown screwball comedy, but it's very close to screwball comedy.
It understands, like, comedic timing and, like, like the, what was the guy in the buffet scene when they were like, he said something really stupid and then the Hungarian guy's like, bologna.
Oh yeah, that's right. He's like, Uncle Felix is like spooning foods onto their plates.
Yeah.
And he's like making comments as he's doing it. Like, he's just saying like, you know, like, oh, like radishes, blah, blah, blah. And then like the guy said, like her like to-be fiance says something and Felix goes, bologna.
Yeah.
And then like later he says like nuts. He's like walnuts, roasted walnuts.
Yeah.
And I also, there's a point later on that I called out earlier when we were watching this. Whenever Yardley is talking to Sloane about how a competing magazine has a feature that is very similar to theirs, and the woman who writes the feature is preparing to have a baby. Betty Kane. And Yardley says, like, of course, we're going to have to nip this in the bud. And he's like, oh, yes. And he's like, we've got to figure out that baby. And Sloane goes, murder? He says it like, yes,
oh, yeah.
Murder.
Like, he's completely in on it. He's like, yep, if that's what we need to do, I guess that's what we gotta do.
We gotta kill this baby.
Yeah. I mean, that's the only thing for it. I did like that Elizabeth Lane, her rival is Betty Kane, which is really Elizabeth Kane, I guess.
Yeah.
You also pointed out something to me, Leah, that I did not notice before. And you and I had, I think, two very, like, a you take and a me take on it. Of that her life initially is living in this studio apartment in New York, just, like, paying 6 months' salary for a fur coat. And I was like, you get what you want. And you're like, well... And you made a very good point that it's sort of like, well, of course in this movie the woman's going to, like, blow this money on
a fur coat. No, I just resent that in the 30s a female character had to be written that, like, is very competent and is able to
in the
have a single
mid-40s,
job. But, like,
yeah.
Then she spends all of her money on a mid coat because that's what a woman do.
Right.
You know?
And that is very true. That
Which
is, like, a very 40s attitude.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, of course the woman's going to go nuts for a coat and, like, lose all sense of reason.
Which I absolutely agree with. And it's funny because I didn't even think of that. I just thought, like, you got what you wanted, girl. You go for it.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, and the weird thing is, too, I feel like if she had not mentioned, like, this is going to cost me 6 months' salary, I would have been like, yeah, okay. Like,
right.
I guess she's fucked up, but, like, literally she's, like, in this condition because she brought a main coat.
Yeah.
Right.
And now, like, and now she'll be royally fucked over if she loses her job.
It's specifically, like, part of the plot line.
Yeah.
They do talk, it's not in the synopsis, but, like, they do talk about in the movie that, like, both her and Dudley will be in serious
They assume that, like, if... if this whole thing is found out by Yardley, Yardley is a stickler for the truth, so he will fire them both if he finds out that this has all been a
Do you also ever get, I got the impression that without having his, like, family come for Christmas, Yardley's just lonely and has all this energy to, like, foist onto someone else, like, just butting into people's situations.
I mean,
and
it's weirdly endearing in a way. Like,
it is.
He's also, like, this old blowhard who never shuts up, but, like, it's sort of like a well-intentioned idiocy, you know? Another thing I have to say about this movie is, for the most part, I really like all the characters. Like, even, like, Sloane, who's boring, like, he's very funny when he's boring.
Yeah.
Because, like, there's, like, very supposed to be talking about, like,
triple jacketed pipes!
Yeah, at the end, when he's, like, talking, like, Yardley has his ear pressed up against the door, and Sloane is like, and of course, blah, 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 architecture, and Yardley's just like, shut up. And so, like, even when they're, like, Sloane is probably the closest you can have to, like, him and Yardley, I guess, are the closest you can have to villains, but they're not really
they're
even
so
villains.
They're,
like, obstacles, sort
of. Yeah.
And, like, Uncle Felix, he's such a very likable character.
He is.
Like, he saves the day at the end.
No, every time I watch this movie, I realize that Uncle Felix is the mastermind behind
it.
He
really is.
He's just this fucking all figured out.
He gets the couple together.
Yeah.
He makes sure that
she
keeps her job and gets double her salary. I also love the scene with his waiter, where the waiter explains to him what the word catastrophe means.
Yeah.
And it's just, I think we all were kind of like, yeah, it's just refreshing that the lone black character in this movie is
no, the
like,
black waiter has, it's like he's just a very normal, he's like a very normal voice, and he explains in great detail
the Greek origin of catastrophe, and Felix is like, oh, it's good. He's
right.
Like, no, sir, that's
no,
bad.
No, sir, that's bad.
It's wonderful, just because, I mean, and maybe that things, I don't think things are that different in the 40s, but I look at that, and I remember the first time I watched this with you guys, and I was sort of like bracing myself, like, ugh.
No, there's plenty of other movies in the 40s where you'll get, like,
Holiday Inn or something.
Holiday Inn, yeah. The Madness Mansion has, like, a really, really bad sort of black, like, matronly housekeeper character.
Yeah.
And for not, while I do think Uncle Felix is some of the humor is derived from, his funny voice, but he's also the smartest character in this
movie.
Yeah, for sure.
He's entirely competent.
Yeah.
Like,
he thinks on his feet much faster than anyone else in this movie.
He's a good cook. We've established early on that, like, he has a restaurant that's thriving very well.
Yeah.
So, like, he knows what he's doing.
But let's take a slight divergence on that. Whenever he mentions food that he makes, it's a real roll of the dice whether or not that tracks for, like, a modern appetite.
Yeah.
Like, do you guys want, what was it, like, roast pigeon with peaches, grenadine?
Yeah.
And,
I mean, it's a lot of it just feels like what food was like in the 40s.
Right.
You know, it's like food that you look back on and be like, ew, garbage.
Right.
A lot of it just seemed kind of bland and gross.
Yeah. Or, like, a lot of, like, boiled vegetables and shit like that.
Although, the one thing that they mentioned, I would totally eat a mushroom omelet. That sounds great.
Well, yeah, that's, like, the simplest thing.
You get a mushroom omelet, like, at fucking Denny's now.
Yeah.
Like, that's not, like, a gourmet food item.
Oh, I know, but when it happened, I was like, oh, okay. Like, I get that.
Well, like, that's not, like, a thing. That's not, like, you know, that's not, like, say, opening.
Right, we have,
thing.
Like, what was it, like, Chicken Maryland or whatever the fuck
Chicken Maryland.
That he's talking
like,
about.
Like, oh,
we looked at.
Generic food item. That would be, like, opening a thing and be like, oh, an onion bagel.
Right.
That's kind of Uncle Felix.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way.
It's a treat.
By the way.
Buy it Stop and Shop.
I would thank Uncle Felix for an onion bagel. I would love to see what he does with that. If we can talk also for a second about Felix's kind of, like, vitriolic chemistry with the housekeeper
Nora.
Who is it's that whole scene with like it's good Irish stew.
He dumps half a bottle.
it's really just like an avalanche
it's
of paprika.
And he's like, now it's goulash, and she just like gives him this look and slams the loop.
By the way, so would I. Where I'm just like, well, you just fucked it either way. Like you're just getting a mouthful of paprika. That
I
is. I also fucking love the judge in this movie.
It doesn't matter
what curveball is thrown at him. He's just, ho, sounds great to me.
He's the happiest. Like, at one point, we're like, to get him out of the house quickly, Felix suggests that he go out a window. And they're just like, oh, a shortcut. And just like jumps out the window. It's just like, what a pleasant guy this must be.
Well, and how much like jolly laughter he had. It was almost Santa Claus.
Well, it
was
over twice on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
And
once
again,
on
Christmas
morning.
Day. Yeah. It is also like, yeah, there's a lot of weird, like, because he says, like, I have to go home and trim my tree. Then starts laughing. He's like, and hang up my stocking. It's almost like innuendo or something.
Right.
But he just sounds so fucking thrilled to be doing these things.
He really does. And I guess that's also like
it's
plot
just,
expediency, but it's still.
It's just idyllic Connecticut.
Yeah,
there.
Right?
Like, it's just everyone that fucking, we're the town entertainment committee. Stops by
personally,
to invite you
to a country dance.
That's right.
Which almost felt like, I mean, I'm sure this was still a thing then, but it did feel almost like a little Pride and Prejudice-y. Like, oh, come to the country ball.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's like if you, it's probably like some shitty town in Connecticut. Like,
I'm sure.
Nowhere, right? Like,
I'm sure. But they were still doing like line dances jazz.
Well, because they had heard about, they specifically come to invite them because they heard about the war hero staying there.
Yeah. God, he's so handsome.
I think there's also something to be said for me, at least. One of the reasons why I enjoy this movie is because it, like, there's something very idyllic about spending Christmas in this big house in the middle of, like, a snowy countryside, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's just something very comforting about that.
Oh, but in case you're worried, that ginormous fireplace is not their only source of heat. They have full unit heating in every room.
They also have a fireplace the size of a grown man in their living room.
The size of five grown men!
Well, it's, like, 6 feet tall and, like, five men wide.
Yeah. It's kind of amazing. I would love to
build
a fire in that.
Isn't there, like, House on Haunted Hill like that, too? Isn't there, like, a massive fireplace?
House on the Hills?
Yeah.
Or what?
What? What are you talking?
Haunting of Hill House or whatever
that is? I don't know. I'm talking about one of them.
They're all different movies. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, one of them movies.
That had an enormous fireplace?
Yeah, that had, like, a big fireplace that you could stand in.
I believe it.
But yeah, but this one isn't spooky. It's
this one's
nice
cheery
and
nice. And,
It's even specifically called out as such by Yardley. He goes on, like, a little monologue about how, like, oh, what cheer and joy this will bring to the house.
It's a very nice, it's a nice open concept living room they have there for the most part.
It's like very Property Brothers.
You know? Yeah, like, it's a big open space, you got a huge tree. It just seems like a very nice place to spend Christmas.
It does.
And for a pianoforte?
Exactly.
To be played while you decorate the tree on Christmas Eve, which I'm sure was just a thing back then, and that's just not something we do now.
No, that seemed, from what I've gathered from movies at least, that seemed to be a thing back in the day. You would just decorate your tree, like, the day before and be like, ta-da, Christmas, take it all down now.
Or maybe that's what you do when Christmas is in August.
Okay, too. What other shit do we like in this?
I don't know. I can't really put a finger to it because I feel like I feel bad that I'm not going to have a whole lot to say for things I like about it.
It's charming.
Just take my word for it that I like it, but I have a lot of criticism for it.
It's charming. It's fun. There are things to criticize about it for sure.
We will get to that. If we have nothing else positive to add, to be fair, we do like this movie. I don't want to sound like we're all picking it apart.
It's a sweet movie.
Yeah, it's a very pleasant, enjoyable way. It's like 100 minutes, so it's not super long.
It has a little bit of edge to it. Like, I would say, I at least appreciated that. I mean, as flawed as Elizabeth Lane is as a character, I did appreciate... she wasn't like a Doris Day type, which I think would have made this movie too treacly. I actually thought she brought a nice little, like, edge.
Well, Barbara Stanwyck was pretty known for playing, like, stronger...
Yeah.
Harder women.
She's just she's a very real feeling woman.
Yes.
She's not like over the top goofy or like inept. She just sort of looks like a woman who's slightly out of her element, like in a place that she never really expected to be.
But dealing with it in such an entertaining way. I mean, she has so many takes where someone said something and you can see that she's playing this moment of, that. And it's so enjoyable to watch.
I guess what I definitely like, 100% with no reservations, is the fact that the male character... is very naturally nurturing and knows how to take care of kids and, like...
He's very interested in homekeeping.
Yeah.
He's an artist and a painter.
I didn't remember that until they said in this movie that he was, like, before the war, he was an artist. So it seems like he never really was this, like, macho-y type guy.
No, he seemed very sensitive.
Yeah. I appreciate that, too.
Like, he really is, like, some sort of dream man.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well,
yeah.
Because he also, as it kind of says in this thing, he goes in there and is a natural with children and has no hang-ups about being able to do this very kind of, what you said, domestic nurturing kind of thing.
He's good at bathing the kid. He's, like, good at changing the diaper. Like, again, he is, like, a very dream man sort of
situation. But it also never feels like, it doesn't feel like he is taken down a peg for doing, quote-unquote, women's work, and it doesn't feel as if she is less for not being able to do that. They do poke fun at her for not being able to cook, but it never came across to me like they're, like, that's why they belong together. But they do complement each other in that way.
I think the humor from her, it doesn't come from the fact that, like, she ought to know how to cook. It just comes from the fact that she is supposed to.
And then
she's supposed to know how to cook.
She plays this
role. It's not like, you know, oh, women should do this. But it's more like you are supposed to do this because you are, like, America's favorite housewife or whatever.
Yeah.
Well,
she wears some killer outfits.
She does, mostly. Do you want to segue into the things that we don't care for as much?
Sure.
All right. Lee, do you want to kick us off?
I guess. I don't like a lot of the aspects. I really don't like the romance at all.
Talk about that a little bit.
I have a hard time with a lot of it. I used to be really into these movies where, like, the rom-com, which we talked about in our rom-com episode, where, like, someone is like pretending to be in love with someone or doing, like, basically there's like a foundational lie, a lie at a foundational level. before they enter into this, like, flirtation slash romance with someone. And I think that there is ways that that can work, but it really specifically doesn't work with this movie, because I feel like I don't, like, Dennis Morgan seems to have been in love with the idea of Elizabeth Lane, this, like, perfect homekeeper Martha Stewart woman, and meets her, and then is like, oh my god, she's also really young and beautiful, and falls in love with her, but, like, she's not that, she's this, like, sort of harsher city woman, and I don't think that Elizabeth, I think that, like, the version of Elizabeth Lane that you see in the beginning of the movie, when it's just
her and her editor,
is different than the one, even the one where it's just her and the dude.
I agree.
That's fair.
It's a different. She's like half acting as Elizabeth Lane and half being herself and half flirting with him.
I agree. It feels like she's more real with Dudley.
Yeah, than she's really
than even how she is with Jefferson at the end.
Yeah,
because she's still sort of like.
Sort of half and half, and like, I don't really think that there's, like, a real foundation to their relationship, because I think that the real person that she was, at least in the beginning of this movie, and I don't really know that she entered, has a significant change in character, isn't really the person that she is with this person, like, with Jefferson.
I also feel like if you wanted to translate the events of this movie into, like, if this were to happen in real life, my takeaway is maybe these two people think they're in love, but I think they're just horny for each other. I mean, they're instantly struck by each other. But that, to me, speaks more to infatuation, not necessarily to, like, this grand romance.
Well, there's a big thing in this movie about people getting married very impulsively. Mm. Like, Mary, the nurse at the beginning, like, marries his shipmate Sinkowitz. Like, as soon as he leaves the hospital,
they get married.
Connecticut, and within, like, that span of 2 days, she has married his shipmate.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that she thinks that she's going to marry Jefferson.
Yeah.
Elizabeth is supposed to marry John very quickly, despite the fact that she tells John she doesn't love him, and, like, could he be okay marrying a woman who doesn't love him? He's like, yeah, I think that could be fine.
Not only marrying a woman that doesn't... even marrying a woman that doesn't love him, she explicitly tells him, I'm marrying you because I'm not going to have work anymore.
Yeah, and at the end, then also, they also reveal that Jefferson and Elizabeth are going to get married, like, right then and there.
Uh-huh.
So there is a lot of impulse marriage in this movie, which I feel like would probably not be a thing today. You would not immediately throw people together and be like, and now marriage.
That's sort of a sign of the times. So a lot of rom-coms of that time ended with, like, well, we fell in love, next step marriage.
Yep, that's
like, why fuck around, right?
Yeah.
You can't have sex because it's the 30s.
Yeah, so we might as well get married and then go for it.
With the 40s.
Well, I mean,
it was the 40s, but 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
A lot of female comedies were like that.
Which they do sort of invoke for a little bit of comedy with Nora the housemaid being like, how of all the brazen?
Such a weird premise, too, where she, like, thinks that John and Elizabeth are going to have sex, so she immediately, like, packs her bags to leave, and they're like, no, that's not the case, and she's like, oh, I'm sorry.
She cannot serve this house of sin.
It's very weird to me that, like, you think almost that there would be a plot point where she leaves and it complicates things somehow,
right?
But it doesn't. They immediately, like, rectify the situation.
It's like a moment of learning about her character, like, why?
It's
not important.
No, it's a fun joke, I think, but you're right, that it is a lot of attention spent to something that doesn't matter at the end of
I do like Nora, though.
I do too, but that moment doesn't have a whole lot of impact on the story.
Yeah. What was it that, Lee, you said the old term for what Nora does in that movie? Maid of all works.
She does everything in the house.
Yeah, Nora's job is to do, like, whatever is needed of her.
Period.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. She's it in the household.
Yeah.
Babies, food, cleaning.
Yeah.
She does it all.
Yep. She's a pro.
She's a pro.
She's a tough old Irish broad.
Yeah, she is. It's stew.
Old Irish
stew. It's good Irish stew.
It's good old Irish stew.
A lot of shouting.
Yeah, she's... I mean,
she's a very
Irish.
Shouty... Yeah, Irish people shout a lot.
Yeah. Have you met my family?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, have you seen me?
Except for your brother. I have not met your brother.
Oh, well, he'll shout.
He'll shout?
You meet him and he'll shout.
Yeah.
Shout or is it Delahantius?
The shouting Delahantius.
Yeah.
The other thing... kind of... not. It's not quite as brief, but it's almost as brief as the I'm leaving now, I'm not... is with Sloane almost getting a job with Yardley's magazine, it's kind of three scenes of that before it's like, yeah, never mind, you're out.
What do you mean, you're out?
Well, because he's not going to carry him in the magazine anymore because he's not married to Elizabeth.
Oh, well, I didn't necessarily think, because at the end, Sloane is still operating under the assumption that he's in because he's still yammering to Yardley about the things, and Yardley says shut up whenever he's listening at the door.
Oh, I thought Yardley said no more.
I think, like, so my... problem, I guess, with that is I think it could be interesting if very early on Yardley was like, and of course, you should be in my magazine too. So if from the get-go, Sloane had an incentive to stay in this, aside from just throwing that in.
Which,
like,
is why that was there.
The movie. Yeah, so like, I think it might be more interesting if he was operating under this assumption earlier on.
Maybe that's why I assumed that Sloane was out, because it was so predicated on him being a couple with Elizabeth that I was like, oh, okay, then you're not a couple with her anymore. I guess that you're not in the magazine.
I mean, he could be, but I don't think it's definitively stated one way or the other is what I would say.
I don't know. I mean, I guess Mr. Sloane is another problem I have with the movie, because I don't... He seems like he's a superfluous character.
He's only there to supply the cabin, ultimately.
Yeah, I mean, we should also... Like, one of the things I tend to find tedious in rom-coms is when there is a character who they clearly will not end up with, but they have to be with for the plot to progress.
The Baxter.
And Sloane is that character. I mean, it's not even the Baxter, because he's, like, he's not even, like, a nice guy. He's just, like, sort of, like... Like, an effete jerk who, like, I mean,
right.
not a jerk. But
I don't
he's
know
just
he's
like,
a jerk. He's not even, he's not a bad guy.
He's sort of a bore.
He's bland.
And so it's like, throughout this entire movie, you know that they're not going to get married. You know that she won't end up with him.
Right.
But we have to do this song and dance where we pretend this is going
to
be the case anyway.
And not
and
to
so
back-
just to remove him as an obstacle, I think, would make it a little bit more enjoyable, because you don't have to deal with this whole thing that we know is not
going to
happen.
Although, not to go back to things we liked, but I did enjoy that they basically called that out from the moment he's introduced. As
nobody likes him.
Oh, yeah.
Well, but no one likes him, not only, but she's like, I have no intention of being with this guy. So it's not even like we're being asked as an audience to look at this as like, oh, this is a legitimate coupling that's going to get broken up. You're like, oh, this was never meant to be.
So we had talked also about how, like, a prequel where Elizabeth, like, gets Uncle Felix out of Hungary somehow. Like, this exciting, thrilling war drama or something.
Right, like, because it seems like he was stuck in Hungary and then the Nazis were coming and she would manage to get him out so he could, like, make a new life. Like,
which would be such a fucking great movie. But I also watched, like... How the fuck did John Sloane come into this picture? And, like, why is he hanging around her all the time? If she, like, she does make her point clear, but at no point is she, like, maybe you should go away and not be here anymore. Because, like, I don't want to say she's leading him on, but, she, like, it's just a weird relationship,
well, it's,
you know?
Because they never explain how they met.
I feel like this is an old trope in movies and stories of, like, a guy... Because there was sort of a person like that in Christmas Prince, like, the...
oh,
guys,
by the way,
not,
watch
Christmas Prince on Netflix.
Not Loki character.
The cousin.
Where it's just like a guy that knows he has no fucking chance in hell of like being with this girl, but he's constantly like, hey, what's up?
Well, it's not even with our main girl though, it's with
the other girl.
With the evil
thing. Like he like it's this old trope of a guy that just like hangs around and is constantly waiting for like, you know, I'm always here. Like he's like just utterly shameless without any pride or dignity, just like I'm here when you want me.
That also probably has a lot to do though with just like plot and script convenience. I don't think a lot of human behavior is going to dictate that a guy's just going to hang around indefinitely like that. They just
true.
Need it for the story.
There's a lot of,
He calls her darling a lot too. So it's like clearly he thinks that there is something there.
Do they used to date?
I think they are dating. Yeah, they are dating, I think. I think that is
in,
what you are
saying. It must be the loosest possible definition.
I think she tolerates it because, like, it's easier than rejecting him because he refuses to accept rejection.
That's certainly
I mean,
true.
It might be. Like, the way we had started earlier is, like, Ina Garten and Jeffrey, where, like, he lives in Connecticut for, like, most of the week, and then, like, once a week pops down to New York and is like, hello, darling, and she's like, oh, hello, John.
I guess I have to scoot all of my gay best friends out of here. We were just having a dinner party, MBD.
So the other thing that we should talk about relating to that is the character of Dudley, and how Dudley is a very interesting character who does not show up again after the first one.
And how he should
minutes.
Be the only other guy.
Not
in the
even.
Movie.
Yeah.
Like 10 minutes.
Yeah. So
he could very easily have been.
He's so handsome. He's so, by my reading.
I mean, I don't think he's super handsome, but I think he has
think
a very. He's like very sort of like slick talking and like smart. And he
he's like an even match with Barbara.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
He seems to be on her level. He seems to be like totally into her setup. You know what I mean? Where he's like, this is what it is, and I'm into it, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, they're both in on this, like, scam, and I sort of like that. They both have this, like, charade that they're enacting. And so, like, they have something to bond over. And again, he's a very, like, he's very smart, he's very fast-talking, he's very quippy, and it just seems like she has such good chemistry with this guy, who they established very early on
is
married with children. Yeah.
And then he never shows up ever again.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that was, I don't know, like, it just feels weird to me that they would establish him and then tell you he cannot be had by Barbara Stanwyck. And then we switch from him to fucking Sloane, who's just boring, and
I
don't care.
If it was just sort of an artifact of the time before we had really worked out, like, the beats of screenwriting, you know?
Maybe.
Because you could argue that today it's more mechanical in terms of, like, do this, do this, do this, do this. But, like, back then, I guess because you didn't really have this concept of, like, these are the things you must do, it was more easy to be like, well, we'll just have him show up and they'll say things. Then he'll leave. We'll never see him again.
It just seems like there was such a natural connection there. And that I don't even, I guess maybe it is mechanical, but I wasn't even thinking about that. I was just thinking in terms of, like, wow, these two characters being together makes so much sense. Why am I shuttling her off in this direction and not towards him?
No, I know. I feel like if you asked the screenwriters, though, they would be like, well, of course she's not with him. Like, he's her editor. Like,
right, of course.
Like, of course they're not together.
The one that never happened.
The thing I don't understand about this movie is, the one thing that wouldn't work, I think, is if they're not, if Sloane wasn't the character of this movie,
mm-hmm.
and Dudley wasn't married, how have they not already fucked?
Like, absolutely.
They have such instant chemistry. Uh-huh. Like, there's no way that you start a situation like that and they haven't already been...
Yeah. When they start talking, you immediately see that relationship behind them. You know what I mean? Like, you see that interaction. And as I remarked upon this, and Lee was very quick to point out, Lee's the progenitor of this ship within this house.
This is the first time I saw this movie. I was like, ooh, the editor's going to be like the
romantic
lead.
Yeah.
Or at least... Because I knew that it was going to be the...
Soldier.
Yeah, you know that it's going to be the soldier from the synopsis, but like... I thought this is going to be the character that I like, the sort of failed... The one that I hate the fucking most in movies where there's a failed, like, love triangle thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, like, when the one that doesn't win in the love triangle is just such clearly the better guy! And I thought, like, oh, it's one of these guys, the guy that's just way better in every sense, but she's going to end up with some fucking idiot instead. No, it wasn't that.
Yeah, I mean, and the choice between Sloane and, like, Jefferson, like, clearly Jefferson is the better option.
Went out, yeah.
But, like, but only Dudley by virtue of the fact that Dudley has been, like, excised from the script entirely.
Although, you know, Jefferson's not...
He's not a bad guy.
No, he's not bad.
I don't think he makes sense with Barbara Stumbus.
Yeah, I think...
Especially because I could see, like, as soon as that movie ends, he's too starry-eyed and golly gee shucks, and she's not there anymore. You know what I mean? Like, she's already years ahead in maturity.
Yeah, and also it's like, oh, we're going to have kids, and she's like, fuck, I have to have kids now?
Yeah. Right.
I don't think she's ever thought about having
kids. She's totally in that situation. She's keeping that studio apartment as, like, her escape. Being like, oh, I have to go work in the city!
Yeah.
And just goes and hides out there for a while so she can breathe.
Yeah. He's clearly been raised on a farm because he knows how to take care of animals and babies and shit like that. And, like, he was an artist and he said, I'm sure that he's, like, ready to settle down.
I mean, similar to what, I mean, going to Brendan's point, that he's perfect man. He's sensitive. He can do manly things like animal husbandry. He can take care of the kids.
Yeah.
He loves your cooking, you know, or I guess your uncle's cooking.
Yeah.
I think also, in terms of a screwball repartee, Dudley and Elizabeth have the closest to what that sort of, like, dialogue is. Like, it's very snappy and fast-paced.
I would agree with the dialogue. I think there are still some... Like, I think, again, the restaurant scene showcases some really good dialogue and the murder thing.
Yeah.
But I think that the screwball comes from the charades that have to go on. The shuffling of in and out of people of doors, like, don't get seen by this person.
It's less of, like, a Bringing Up Baby style screwball where there's, like, a woman who's, like, driving all the plot manically forward. Where here it's like there is a charade being enacted and that is what's propelling the plot and everyone else is just sort of along for the ride.
A lot of examples you could cite of movies, like, of that nature where it starts on a mistaken identity or, like, an innocent lie that turns into, like, a really... oof, bad situation. I think Easy Virtue was the closest, like, thing I could think of. Also involves what I chose.
Not to go away from things we didn't like, but I love the scene of when Dudley comes into Elizabeth's apartment to, like, tell her what's up. She's like, do you want a drink? No. And then he just pours himself a scotch. Like, it's so great. There could have been more of that. Yeah. I think that's sort of a different movie, though. Because if you're giving us the sweetsy happy Christmas surprise, you can only take the Elizabeth Lane and Dudley world so far before that's just too uneven and rough.
Yeah, I mean, I think the movie is still rooted in, like, idolizing the homie.
The pastoral life.
Yeah, it's definitely.
And it's awkward because I don't think that Barbara Stanwyck, by the end of the movie, I'm not convinced that she's bought into it yet.
No, fuck no. Also, they're not staying on that farm. It belongs to Sloane. He's not going to let them stay there.
No, I mean, I never thought they were staying on the farm.
Yeah, I think, like, by the end of the movie, I think Jefferson is still in love with this idea of this life, but I don't know that Barbara Stanwyck has changed her mind about it.
I mean, do we all agree that after this movie ends, that relationship falls apart rapidly?
I mean, I would more say I don't know what happens to it, but it feels like it's in for a very different twist at this point. So, like, So I think they imply sort of at the end that Jefferson suspected that something was amiss with them. But the actual confirmation doesn't come until Felix flat out tells him, like, very near the end that this is what's going on. So you don't really get a scene of them interacting where she's like, this is all bullshit. This is what I'm really like. I eat sardines for breakfast. I live in my apartment. I have a mink coat. I think it's fucking great.
He never gets to see the real Elizabeth.
Yeah. And so, like, it would also be, like, I think it would go a little bit toward helping Lee's point that, like, he's never seen the real her.
Yeah.
If there was a point where she, like, shows who she really is and he's still like, that's okay. Like, I still like you. And, like, this is, I'm fine with you.
That is a really great point, too, because, yeah, who is he in love with? You're right. He is still in love with.
He's in love with, yeah.
Magazine Mrs. Elizabeth Lane.
Elizabeth Lane, the best housekeeper in America.
And ever.
Yeah.
There was a line, and maybe this can be explained, but there is a line where she asks him, this is almost at the very end, it's like, you knew all along? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, no.
No, we didn't.
Yeah.
You knew like 2 minutes ago.
That's a very weird thing to say.
So was she saying you knew since you came in the room and was doing this whole weird act with me where you were like coming on to me and I'm saying no?
Or did she just mean like you knew that I was into you? I don't know.
Well, if she...
Yeah. No, I'm sorry.
She wanted him to know that.
Yeah, true, true, true.
No, he would have had to have... I don't even know what. There's no way in hell he didn't know that she wanted him.
Yeah.
From moment one, she is high-beaming him with sex eyes.
No, that is a weird statement to make.
By the way, expect me to use that phrase again for Love Actually, because it's going to happen.
That is a weird thing for him to say at the end, because I don't really know where it's coming from still.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
The one thing I'll say as well about the, I think I noticed at this time, is that they established that he's just gotten out of the hospital. And one thing I would have loved to see that you don't see is like him actually being really weak still.
Mm-hmm.
But like he's goes from like being in a bed and a wheelchair to like up and around guiding cows, holding kids, like,
well, which actually could have been a good,
it would have been nice to see, but, like, God forbid you show the vulnerability of man.
Of a man,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Well, it would have also
and
been...
a war hero.
Yeah.
It would have also been interesting to kind of see that reversal, right? Where we've been led to believe Barbara Stanwyck doesn't even have it in her to do any of these things. And maybe she's not going to be the best at it, but maybe in his weakness she finds something to be like, oh, I somehow figured out how to lead a fucking cow into a barn. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, well, I think that she... You could have still had those scenes where he's doing it, but he could have been guiding her instead of actually doing it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But, like, I just wish that, like, I don't expect a movie of the 40s to realistically portray a, like, a broken
male weakness
from war.
Yeah.
But, like, it would have been a nice thing to see.
God, I would love for a movie titled Christmas in Connecticut to be about, like, post-traumatic stress disorder and physical weakness.
Do we have anything else we want to add in terms of this before we move on?
No.
Good.
No.
No!
All right, so before we do move on to our remake pitches, the one thing I wanted to throw out real quick is that there was, in fact, a remake of this movie made for TNT in the 90s that is garbage. It's a garbage movie directed by Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, my God.
Starring Diane Cannon, Chris Christopherson, and Tony Curtis. The one update it makes that I think makes sense is that Elizabeth Lane has, like, a TV show, mm-hmm. essentially. Like, it's like a Martha Stewart living or whatever the crap it is. The other changes that start to fall apart, like... effectively, Sloan, Yardley, and Dudley have been combined into one character played by Tony Curtis. And it's a bizarre amalgamation.
Very confusing.
There is something, I think, to be said for combining maybe two of those. When you get three, it's just sort of like, okay, like now like the plot is starting to fall apart a little bit.
Right.
There are additional problems where she, instead of Uncle Felix, she has a best friend who does the cooking for her. That friend is having relationship problems. They have, like, a kid who's staying with them, like, two kids, I think, who's staying with them. And it's a fucking mess. So the inspiration was also, at one point I was considering watching the remake for our December movie and saying, like, how would we fix this movie? But instead of subjecting ourselves to that, I thought we could just talk about how you would do a remake of Christmas in Connecticut.
Yeah.
Anyone want to start?
I'll start, actually, if you guys are cool with that.
That's fine.
Sure.
Do you want to go first?
No, I really don't.
Okay, great. I mean, I came into this movie late in life. You guys have both seen it, my impression is, multiple times before you guys gifted this movie to me.
Probably.
In terms of an experience. I think if you're remaking this movie now, there's a pretty clear line to do that. And... not to be that asshole, but I feel like the very clear one is to be that Elizabeth Lane, if you're updating this again, right, so we're doing TV in the 90s, in this one it's going to be Instagram influencer. I know that sounds way too whatever, but I actually think that works just in terms of you're living a life that is very different from what you're projecting in static images that have been edited and couched to look a certain way. My thought is the Jefferson character is also a soldier who, you know, came out of a bad situation and would like a really, really nice Christmas at this woman's place. My thought is, instead of having a magazine publisher bearing down on her, it's more like a larger sponsor for whose products she typically is doing sponsored content for on Instagram, which is a very, it's an issue now. And I don't know that I would change a whole ton of the plot. I definitely would try to broaden Elizabeth as a character in terms of not necessarily limiting her to like spending all of her money on mink coats. Like I said, I did enjoy the fact that she was spending her money as she wanted to, but I absolutely do think it's damaging of like, well, of course the woman's gonna, that's where she's gonna throw her money. Also, in this case, in my fix of this, she doesn't stay with Sloane and she doesn't get with Jefferson. She's absolutely getting with her editor character in this case.
But you have all three characters in this?
Yeah, okay. For sure. I think you have the Sloane character, we'll say, as a guy who just kind of owns a cabin that she sort of like Airbnbs her way into. The Dudley character is going to be the liaison between the sponsor and her, who she has a rapport with, who she works a lot with, who they've spent a lot of long hours with. He is along for this ride, even art directing this thing as it goes. The soldier type, they just don't connect, and he's also grossed out by how this image that he believed was true is not. That's not necessarily played as an indictment of anyone. More so, it's played, I would say, as an indictment of his own immaturity for realizing that anything on Instagram when presented to you like that is real. So that's kind of it. I guess it's a slightly more cynical, darker take, and maybe not so much a Christmas movie, but that's how I would update it, I think.
I had some trouble trying to figure out exactly what Elizabeth would do in this day and age. I think the obvious thing to hit upon was that she had a YouTube series, but the problem I had with her being on YouTube is that I don't like her being in a role where you physically see her. Because I think if she's keeping this elaborate charade that she lives in Connecticut, if she's like living in New York and she wanders through the streets of New York and has a popular show, someone's going to see her and be like, oh, hey, why are you going to that apartment building, Elizabeth? Like, why aren't you back in your Connecticut farm? Isn't baby doing well or something like that? And so the thing that I hit upon, I'm not wild about it, but that she is a blogger. So what I have here is I've got my little character synopsis, and then I have like, I was doing my whole synopsis, but I only did three paragraphs, so I just have to sort of skim the rest. So we've got Liz Lane, who is a popular blogger who writes a cooking lifestyle blog that has recently started blowing up. Jeff Sloane, a random guy who went viral after he rescued a dog from drowning. Beecham Dudley, Liz's gay best friend who handles the logistics of her blog. Sydney O'Connor, Liz's other best friend, who's a great cook but hates being like the public face of anything. Like, she just does not want to be noticed or anything like that. And Allie Yardley, who is the home television network exec optioning Liz's show for a spot on her network. So Liz writes a blog entitled Cozy in Connecticut, which is a website that chronicles her life as an engaged 20-something living an idealized, Instagrammable life in rural Connecticut. In actuality, Liz lives in New York City with her roommates Beecham and Sydney. Her blog was started almost as a joke, but has become immensely popular, almost beyond their control. They're sort of afraid to back off of it at this point because they realize that it is, in fact, a good publicity for all of them. As the movie begins, HTVN exec Ali Yardley contacts Beecham with a proposal to launch a TV show starring Liz based on her life in Connecticut, shot on location. Liz is apprehensive, but Sydney and Beecham are excited. This could be a big break for them, having struggled to find work in their chosen industries after college. If they have to bullshit their way through it, who really cares? Allie also has the idea of filming her pilot over Christmas at Liz's Connecticut house and wants to invite Jeff Sloane, a young man who recently became a viral sensation when a video of him saving an old woman's dog from drowning hit the internet. Jeff has a real disdain for this sort of internet culture, but he also realizes it might be helpful for his career as a burgeoning artist. So I wanted to remove the war thing entirely because I think that's sort of fucking a dour topic in this modern society. In the 40s, it was a different thing when we had this idealized concept of war and like
of a GI.
Us versus the baddies, and everything is good and we're doing good and there's no way to look at this as being a bad thing. I don't want to include it because I think it just adds too much subtext that I don't want to deal with. So I think the only thing that I want to change is with Jeff being like a viral sensation is because I want to focus more on the internet aspect of this as opposed to being sort of a war thing. So the premise that they're operating all under is that Jeff is going to show up there Beecham is posing as her fiancé, but obviously him being gay, there's nothing ever going to happen. Sydney is trying to find excuses to, like, keep showing up despite the fact that, like, they have no real reason for this other woman to be there. There starts to be sort of, like, a mistaken thought where, like, Jefferson and Allie are like, oh, like, is that her secret lover, like, or something? Like, is this woman who's showing up, like, actually sort of interested in her? I don't want the baby thing because, again, that's too much of a complication. And I think the way it ends up resolving itself is that at the end, like, the three of them sort of stand up to Allie Yardley and are like, look, okay, like, we understand, we fucked up, we bullshitted this, we're very sorry for, like, wasting your time. And then Jeff has the pitch that, like, it should be the four of them together on a show creating some sort of program about, like, how, oh, you don't know how to do this thing? We'll show you how to do this thing. Like, Liz is a really great personality. She's great at entertaining people. She's very personable. Like, this is how you can be whenever you're, like, at a party or if you're throwing something. I have to meet, like, a new boss. And, like, you know, he's showing how to do, like, craftsy art things. And, like, Sydney is showing how to cook and shit like that. So it's just sort of more of a, like, we get it. We don't have this idealized life. And no one does. But, like, this is how you can try and be better.
That's a really nice ending to that. I also, the detail I really wanted to single out, I love that their blog started off as a joke, but people took it seriously.
See, that was,
that's a great way to kind of straddle that line.
The other problem is that it feels like it's a hard sell in this day and age to be like, we knew this was a sham going into it, but now we're just going to keep writing it for all it's worth. And then to be like, well, I like these characters.
Right.
Like, they're fun.
It's, no, it's too tough. But yeah. I actually think that's really smart because I, in their head, because that positions them as intelligent, but oops, this happened, and now they're in too deep, and they don't know how to back out. I mean, that was great.
Thank you. Lee, what you got for us?
I have two simultaneous ideas.
All right, let's go.
First is a modern British remake called Christmas in the Cotswolds.
Cotswolds are beautiful.
Because I think that what if I'm doing this idea that was like, but someone feeded to me last night of reversing genders. I think that the male celebrity chef started in the UK and is still very thriving over there. Mm-hmm. I think the like Hester Blumenthal and like Gordon Ramsay and Jamie Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
There's just like a huge thing over there. And I like the idea of it being a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I did a modern remake in the UK, it would be that. It would be like a sort of like male, like, sexy AF celebrity chef. Not that Jamie Oliver is really that sexy. Or Hester Blumenthal. But
he's right.
I mean, they're all, like, attractive for what they do,
yeah,
right?
But I would definitely make sure that this is, like, a, like,
legit,
some sort
look,
of legit,
looking.
Yeah, like, full package guy who's got, like...
oh, he's got a
stuffy.
Full package,
yeah.
Honey.
Wow. Yes.
Like, because he needs to have, like, he needs to be, like, the dream in a different way from Elizabeth Lane, because he's, like, oh my god, a man that can cook and
right.
is also really gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who runs, has this sort of like BBC cooking show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's secretly his partner, not his real, like, not his like romantic partner,
yeah.
but like he, there is a woman behind the scenes who is like the real, first of all, the real chef
mm-hmm.
behind it and knows how to do the cooking. And I think is also like the director of the show or like has some sort of like executive capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So really she's like the brains and he's the face of the operation.
I like that.
Because she's just incredibly like abrasive and harsh and like an introverted and doesn't really want anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And he also has like no real, he's like really good with personality, but he has like no sense of like responsibility or like timing or like, you know, he's spacey. And so he needs someone to, like, really keep shit together for him. And I think in that version, there is no... I don't even think that there's, like, a soldier plotline. I think that it's just, like, a higher-up BBC wants to do, like, some, like, at-home thing. And they don't have this home life.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have, like, a real... like, because she's also not going to be, like... the ideal wife, like, wife
right.
that he would have.
Right.
She's just, like, a, again, like, a really abrasive personality that wouldn't, and she's probably not, like, even the best looking.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they have to do this sort of thing, like, at his home with his family that he doesn't have, and so they have to, like, hire someone to be his, like, perfect wife,
mm-hmm.
And potentially a kid. And they have to, like, film it at this home. But, yeah, there would be, like, no, like, beyond the bosses at BBC, it would just be them deceiving the public and their
right.
bosses, there
mm-hmm.
wouldn't be, like, a guy that they're hosting or a woman that they're hosting.
Yeah.
I love that you added a few different levels to that, though, of, like, who's kind of hiding behind who and who's the face of what. And
yeah.
I thought I think that's a really cool thing to play with.
The other thing I would want to do is, like, still keep it in the 40s,
mm-hmm.
but, like, be able to do things that you can't do now. And I had, like, I thought, like, what if... like, if I, because here's the thing, my problem is, like, I really like them and the editor together, her and the editor together, but, like,
yeah.
what do you do with Jefferson in that case?
Yeah.
And I feel like, what if Jefferson is gay? And like, oh. And so like, that's never even a question.
Yeah.
Like he, that, like, he always yeah. had it for Sinky.
Oh, God.
God. No, was, Sinky is an awful stinky person.
Yeah.
No, but like, what if like, he either got himself into the situation where like some woman was like, oh, like you'd marry me. And he's like, not really. but like for whatever, he ends up in this, like, you know, he ends up hooked up with this lady's house for the weekend. And he's fine with it because he's obsessed with this woman's cooking. And he knows how to do all this stuff. And so like, it's quickly revealed, like he reveals to her and he becomes in on the gag very quickly. He's mm-hmm. like, oh, don't worry. Like, I'm not interested in any of this.
Yeah.
And she's like, she kind of breaks down really quickly. It's like, I don't even know what the fuck I'm doing, by the way, help me. Mm-hmm. and he's like, okay, I got this. Like, I know how to take care of a kid. Like, we can do this. And I think in that case, Dudley Beecham is the guy that is pretending to be her husband.
Right.
And I think that Jefferson then becomes like a sort of confidant character to like realizing that, like, why aren't they together yeah. already?
I want to see that movie.
Can I say, I like the thing that I liked about both of yours is that you untangle the romantic triangle, which I think is a great, like, it's such a great relief to not have to deal with this whole like bullshit
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's just this added layer of nonsense that I don't need from this
yeah. movie. Because I think in the first movie, if it was modern, there would still be another woman, but she would not even enter into the picture. Like, she would be some sort of comedic flavor character.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I do also enjoy. Though that I love this idea of doing this movie still in the 40s, same setting, but you're taking advantage of stuff you can do now that you couldn't do
yeah.
then.
Yeah.
I love that. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
All right.
Guys. Let's
write these up, send them in an envelope, Hollywood, USA.
You guys have three options.
Four. Yeah.
You guys have four options.
Yeah.
Four options. Gay all right. stuff all around.
Yeah. Lots of gays. Well, thank you guys for watching this and talking about this with me. I'm glad we got to do a movie that we all really liked.
Me too.
And still try and figure out like how you would change this sort of thing, which I think is a fun thing to do, honestly. We don't always get to talk about like an enjoyable movie.
Well, I was going to say, doing this podcast has made me appreciate liking the movies I like.
Yeah. No, it's like yeah. it's such a pleasure to watch a movie that you really enjoy and be like, oh, this is good.
Well, because it's so... I guess I was afraid that after doing this, I couldn't watch another movie without, like, tearing it apart in my head of, like, well, blah, blah, blah. And I may be a little more critical, but I still could sit down and be like, ugh, I had fun.
Yeah.
I didn't have to sit there and be like, well, this is fucked up, and what does this mean, and da-da-da-da. It was great.
Yeah.
I loved
it. It's good shit.
Good shit.
All right. Well, we will see you guys again 2 weeks from now with Love Actually. Try making some drinks. Try getting through this shit. It's going to be a long-ass movie in terms of characters and... threadbare romantic plot lines.
Oh,
so strap yourselves in for this shit.
And threadbare plot threads.
Yeah. All right. So let's buy it out. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Ready?
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.